Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Biden's Build Back Better, getting closer? Maybe. Kaiser Healthcare, still facing a major headache in California. And today on the show, The Nation magazine on John Deere workers and the North Coast Labor Federation. Welcome to the Thursday, November 18th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with one of the great writers from The Nation magazine, and that is Mr. Dave Lesh. Dave is the editor of the Prairie Progressive. He'll talk about that briefly. He's also a member of the American Federation of Teachers, Local 716 out of Iowa. And he did two stories on the John Deere workers, and I must admit, we recorded his segments a couple of days ago, and during the conversation, we were informed that there was going to be a vote on a third contract for John Deere workers. Well, guess what? They ratified the contract yesterday, and the John Deere workers are back at work. UAW members approved a new six-year contract with Deere and Company, ending a five-week-long strike of the agriculture and construction machine maker. Boy, anybody that has a John Deere tractor knows how darn good it is. I'll tell you, those workers make a really, really good product. Well, it turns out about 61% of the voters approved the agreement, which includes boosts to hourly wages and retirement benefits. The company will also maintain the health insurance program in which workers do not pay premiums. Let me repeat that. The workers do not pay premiums. You don't get that without a union. All right? That just does not happen. The vote comes after the 10,000-member union rejected two previous contracts proposed by Deere. In fact, the first rejection was 90%. The second one, they got about only 45% approving, and this one, again, was 61%. Don't have all the details, but slowly but surely they'll be filtering through. But Dave did a really good job. He talked to several workers, and a number of them were younger, quite militant, and they weren't too happy with the union leadership for the proposals that they put on the table. And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the history of the company and just get into the nitty-gritty of life on the picket line. And as you may remember, one of the workers was killed on the picket line some weeks ago. There was a picket line at 6 a.m. It was kind of dark, and a guy came by, just hit him, died practically instantly. So Dave Lesh, one of the great writers of The Nation magazine, a publication that's been around since 1865. There's not too many publications that can say that. Pat Gallagher, on behalf of the North Coast Labor Federation and the steelworkers, will be joining us later as our second guest. And two things he's going to talk about. President Biden recently thanked the steelworkers and their own union president, Tom Conway, for helping him solve the festering U.S.-European dispute over Trump's tariffs on imports of steel and aluminum. In return, Europe dropped its retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods. Now, this was primarily designed by Trump to attack China, but it went further than that, and he ticked off our friends in Europe. The tariffs will be eliminated on European steel and aluminum imports no higher than 2017-2018 levels, and then be 25% above that. The Trump tariffs, as I indicated, aimed at China, which produces more than half of the world's steel. That's sick in itself. How did that happen? I guess we know the answer to that. We gave it to China. Let's put it that way. Infrastructure, big story, and we'll get into that. Steel workers were pushing this for many, many months. In fact, they started a campaign some months ago. We supply America. Now, one of the components, probably one of the main components in that infrastructure bill, is buying American goods and services. And you have to thank Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio for making that possible and writing that into the infrastructure bill. So that's certainly good news for the steel workers when you think of how much steel is going to be used in our infrastructure. Only makes sense. So Pat Gallagher is going to be our second guest right here on America's Workforce. In the latest news on the Democrats' once big, bold budget reconciliation package, better known as the Build Back Better Act, which Democrats, some of them, have since whittled down to a $1.7 trillion framework. Economists and analysts in leading rating agencies have found that the social spending package will not add inflationary pressures in the American economy. This according to a Reuters report released on Tuesday, which has been one of Senator Joe Manchin's concerns with the bill. William Foster, vice president at Moody's Investors Service, one of the big three credit rating agencies, explained that the legislation should not have any real material impact on inflation, and the impact on the fiscal deficit will be very, very small because the spending is spread over a relatively long period of time. Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's, agreed, adding that the bills do not add inflationary pressures because the spending will help lift long-term economic growth via stronger productivity and labor force growth and thus take the edge off inflation. He also said the bills are largely paid through higher taxes on multinational corporations as well as well-to-do households. Now, the Congressional Budget Office, better known as the CBO, has announced that it will release a complete cost estimate for the Build Back Better bill by tomorrow. So we'll see what the CBO has to say. Healthcare conglomerate Kaiser Permanente has reached a tentative agreement with more than 50,000 of their workers to avert a massive strike that was set to begin on Monday. However, the company still faces a mass walkout in Northern California this week, as more than 60,000 frontline healthcare workers, nurses, optometrists, technicians, lab scientists, mental health clinicians, all represented by the Service Employees International Union and United Healthcare Workers West, the Office and Professional Employees International Union, Local 29, the Engineers and Scientists of California, Local 20, along with the California Nurses Association. That's quite a group there. They're all slated to walk off the job, possibly today and tomorrow. The workers have decided to protest in support of the more than 700 biomedical engineers at the facility, represented by the Stationary Engineers, Local 39, who have been on strike for more than 8 weeks. 24 hours a day, demanding wage increases after their contract with the giant national healthcare company expired back in September. Kaiser's still having a lot of problems. In New York City, more than 100 staffers at the New York Times protested outside the Times headquarters. This was in Manhattan on Tuesday, accusing the newspaper of delaying contract negotiations with their union, the Times Guild, which represents more than 1,000 journalists, reporters, and editors at the Times, has been bargaining for a new collective bargaining agreement with the New York Times Company for about 8 months now. Meanwhile, in South Burlington, Vermont, school bus drivers for the city's public school system overwhelmingly voted to unionize, citing low wages, a grueling working schedule and the hardest working conditions in years. 23 of the 24-member bargaining unit, consisting of drivers and bus monitors, voted to join the South Burlington Educators Association and the National Education Association. Relatedly, an article published in The Guardian this week explained that the drivers of the vehicles that shuttle America's children to and from school are now caught in the wave of labor unrest sweeping across the U.S. And they noted that strikes, walkouts, and protests among school bus drivers have occurred this fall in nearly a dozen states across the country, forcing some districts to temporarily close schools, modify schedules, or raise pay and offer bonuses. To invoke the words of one Shanta Henderson. Shanta is a school bus driver in Florida. She said, "The problem is not a bus driver shortage. The problem is a bus driver salary shortage." Good point. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, The Nation Magazine on John Deere Workers.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one, and this is a segment we started many, many years ago, and what we do is talk to certain writers from The Nation magazine. What a great publication. Nation.com is their website, and joining us on our live line is David Lesh. David is the editor of the Prairie Progressive and a member of the American Federation of Teachers Local 716 in Iowa. And he's a native of Chicago, went to the University of Iowa, and he's been in Iowa since the mid-70s. Did I get that all right, David? Is that what happened in your early days? Go ahead.
I think you did a good job, Ed.
Okay. Now, whereabouts? Now, Iowa's not a really big state. Where are you in Iowa? And talk to me about your affiliation with the American Federation of Teachers.
Well, sure. Iowa City is an hour west of the Mississippi River. It's home to the University of Iowa, one of two major universities in the state. The other one is Iowa State University in Ames, Iowa. We have often been called in Iowa City the People's Republic of Johnson County because we are the most liberal Democratic registration county and city in the state of Iowa. We're kind of like the Austin of Texas, if you get me.
So you're the only blue spot in the state. Everything else is red then, I take it?
Very close. Not literally, but certainly the bluest. And unfortunately, we have become a really red state in the last 7-8 years. The American Federation of Teachers, Local 716, is a small local. We formed it years ago, truthfully, because we wanted to have a union. A lot of us were either middle management or self-employed and just didn't have a bargaining unit to belong to. So we got affiliated with AFT. We're not super active, but we're there to make contributions and circulate news when needed.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have an affiliation with the Ohio Federation of Teachers. In fact, we just did a segment with them 2 days ago with Melissa Cropper. She's a longtime contributor. And let me ask you this, and I want to get into the John Deere situation. I know we're a little bit off subject, but she pointed out that a lot of teachers are burning out. I mean, they had a rough year last year with the pandemic. And she said that November is the new May. You know, by May, everybody's ready to go on vacation, summer vacation. Is that kind of the case over there? And she also pointed out a lot of teachers are frustrated. They're planning on leaving or have left already. What's the situation there?
She's exactly right. In fact, the news came just in the last couple of days. One school has actually closed. They don't have teachers. And they don't have substitutes. Teachers are either calling in sick or retiring, or they can't get childcare in this state either. So the combination of the virus, the general burnout, and teachers are not respected in the state of Iowa anymore. We used to have the best education in the country by many measures. And the state and the Board of Regents, they really no longer support public education the way they used to. So teachers feel disrespected as well. My own niece teaches at a local middle school. She's on the verge of quitting almost every day.
And I see that Iowa was one of several states that did away with public sector unions. This was back in 2017. I wouldn't imagine that kind of contributed to the problem over there. What do you think?
I'd say it was a major contribution. In Iowa, again, we now have all three branches of government controlled by Republicans who are not averse to using that power, introducing bills late at night with no public discussion. And one of those was collective bargaining, which had no discussion prior to that election. But almost immediately, that was the first thing they did. And they made it almost impossible for locals to stay in business. They have to vote to be recertified every single year. And if somebody doesn't vote, it gets counted as a no. So it's been a real tribute to our unions and the labor movement in Iowa that so many unions have followed these ridiculous rules and have survived. So we're not dead yet, but they're trying to kill us.
Oh, I know. Yeah, they really game the system there. So if you don't vote, that's considered a no. Do you imagine?
Have you ever heard of that? Can you imagine?
Well, how would that be when we're voting for, like, president of the United States?
Yeah,
that would be an interesting scenario there.
Yep.
You know, I'm glad we're talking about this because this issue came up in your article, your most recent article, and we're talking about the John Deere strike that twice now the UAW has rejected. And union brothers and sisters are typically pretty well educated on what's going on with labor and labor rights. I mean, I think I'm safe in saying that, but apparently some of the people that you talk to over in Iowa that are on strike were not even aware that the state of Iowa abolished public sector unions 4 years ago. And that's pretty scary. Let's talk about that. And sure. I'd like to get you, yeah, I'd like to get the feel of these workers on the picket line. One of them lost his life. I remember doing the story that's just right. a couple weeks back. So talk to me about your experience. What are they telling you?
Well, first of all, we have a great labor center at the University of Iowa, and they do a heroic job of educating workers. In fairness to the UAW folks, I mean, they're not a public sector union, so yeah. it's not at the top of their mind. But the it was disappointing to hear from a few folks that just seemed to be kind of oblivious to anything that didn't directly affect them. I'm sure the Labor Center and others have sent that message across, but apparently it's not that meaningful to them.
So in your estimation, and it seems to me, because I saw what they were offering in the second proposal, that we got maybe a young rebellious group here at the UAW. What's your take?
It's really hard to say. There's old timers too, but very few of them remember the last strike of in the mid '80s. And there's a glorious labor history in what we call the Quad Cities, Davenport and Rock Island and Moline, that area right on the Mississippi. But the younger ones aren't really aware of it, I can't really generalize it. There's not everybody is unaware of that history, but a surprising number are.
So we're talking about a strike here. It's been going on for weeks. 10,000 John Deere company workers, and this is America's biggest maker of agricultural machinery. Again, they had two contracts. First one was a 5% raise, and this follows a year of record-breaking profits. They came back with 10% and an $8,500 signing bonus. Now, the second proposal, it was closer. The first one was just shot down altogether. I'm just wondering, is there some kind of a disconnect between the union leadership on what they're putting on the table and what the members want? What are the members telling you?
That's a really good question. I'm not privy to a lot of their personal thoughts, but I do get the impression that there's some dissatisfaction with leadership. They rejected that first tentative agreement with 90%. That's really sending a message to the negotiators that they were unhappy. So the next one was much closer, 55 to 45. And I think this might not mean too much to your listeners, but the Waterloo UAW is a little bit more militant, and they were strongly against the second agreement, and it was a lot closer in the other bargaining areas. But 90% that first time was pretty remarkable, and 55-45 still sends a message for the second one.
Now, the other issue is the two-tier wage system. And I know a lot, Kellogg's workers are fighting that too. And it's been around for years now. I think they brought that up in the general contract with the UAW when we had the financial pitch in 2007, 2008. And there was a lot of pushback on that. Is that whittled down some, or is that still in the proposal? And is that causing the friction right now?
That's still in the proposal.
All right. So
I think members may have somewhat, again, I hesitate to generalize, they've given up a little bit on that. There's also something called supplemental employees who they're not exactly temps. They work full time, and it's very confusing. And as you might guess, it's purposely confusing, much like the continuous improvement program that the company has. It's really hard for workers and even experts to follow. So it's really hard to say, Ed.
Wait a minute. I got to stop you there. What's this continuous improvement program? And this is something that John Deere wants? I got to know more about
that. Yeah, well, they've
got it. They got it. Okay.
I'm sure you're aware that's in my history with organizing in labor unions, that's usually a code for an anti-union effort, continuous. And we don't, you guys don't need a union because we've got this continuous improvement program. I saw that when I was an organizer for University of Iowa professional and scientific staff around 2005. So continuous improvement, I'm not going to try to explain it. Even the union people have a hard time to explain it. The company raises the standards for any so-called work team that hits a certain percentage of its performance target. And it takes about a half a year to measure that. And then if they meet that standard, they don't get paid for considerably longer time after that. And the numbers are preposterous. I see one. I've just got an article in front of me. Under the new contract, the company would hold off on increasing a team's goals unless it hits 124.88% of its target over the course of a full year. So how do you interpret that?
So
they claim in their third offer that they've modified that somewhat, but the only people I've talked to think that the only thing that's changed is that you might get that extra money a little bit sooner than you would have otherwise. But it's a ridiculous system. I think everybody knows it. I don't know if it's going to make a difference on the third vote.
Okay, we'll see what happens there. All right, can you stay with us for another segment here, Dave?
Happy to, Ed.
Dave Lesh is his name, and this is a segment we do each and every month with The Nation magazine. He's also editor of the Prairie Progressive and a member of the American Federation of Teachers. We're talking Local 716 out of Iowa City. We'll continue the conversation. Also, we have the North Coast Labor Federation segment coming up later in the show with Mr. Pat Gallagher. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on six different platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always like those five-star ratings, so keep them coming. Let's go to our live line once again and rejoin Dave Lesh. Dave is editor of the Prairie Progressive, member of the American Federation of Teachers, Local 716. He also authored a couple of articles on the John Deere strike, which has been going on for weeks. There may be a new agreement coming here shortly, but you wanted to mention your, what is this, a newsletter? The Prairie Progressive. I was going to ask you about it, and I know you want to talk about it, so here's your opportunity. Go ahead.
Thanks a lot, Ed. I just wanted to mention it's a small newsletter, but it's been in existence for 36 years. It's printed at the only union printer in the area. We originally called it a newsletter for Iowa's Democratic left, but we cover a little bit of culture and arts as well. And it's all local writers. Once in a while, we have some correspondents from across the country, but it's we're proud that it's printed on paper. And it's also online at theprairieprogressive.com. We'd love for your listeners to check it out. It's inexpensive to keep us going. People do like the old-fashioned print as well. So thanks for the opportunity for plugging it.
I will definitely check it out. We used to do a segment with the Washington Spectator magazine. It's a newsletter.
Yes.
It was just like four. Yeah, great publication. And the editor, I'll never forget this, Lou DuBose was the guy that took it over. And when Trump got elected, I got an email from him. He said, "Flash, I'm done. I'm leaving the country." And that was the end of the publication. I go, Lou, wait a minute.
We haven't gotten that far yet, but Jim Hightower has the Hightower Lowdown, which is a similar format in print.
He's great. Yeah, he's been on the show a number of times. Yeah, he's a fighter. He's a good guy. Good guy. All right, let's go back to the story regarding John Deere. And as we are recording this interview, there's a possibility of a settlement. We don't know. They may be rejected again, but I just wanted to point that out. One of the big issues here is, and we've seen this across the board, Dave, where you got CEOs, and you know the story with CEO pay. It used to be, and it still is in many countries outside the United States, maybe, 25, 30, 50 to 1, what the average worker would make, 50 times more. In the United States, it's like 300 to 1. In some cases, it's even higher. It could be 1,000 to 1, especially when you have like Jeff Bezos in Amazon. So I'm looking here in your article, Dave, the CEO who goes by the name of John May made $15.6 million in 2020, year of the pandemic, and which is still going on, of course. And that is a 160% raise. So obviously this is an issue with the workers. I'd like to get your take on that. Is this what they're talking about? You talked to a number of workers on the picket line. They've got to be pretty frustrated with this equation.
Well, sure. That's why there's still going to be a substantial amount of workers who vote against the contract. They don't think it comes anywhere close to acknowledging their contributions. I guess that the CEO deserved that 160% raise because stock share prices have doubled in the last couple of years, and their net sales globally, they're a global company. I've read that that's gone up by 27%. So the company's doing great, and the CEO is doing great. And the workers are really just asking for fair compensation. They were told they were essential employees during the COVID pandemic. And they loyally came into work. And this is what they get for their efforts.
Yeah, I'm sure many of them got sick as a result for going to work and may not be here today. And of course, we mentioned the gentleman who was a picketer. And it was, I know that happened like at 6 in the morning. He was crossing the road. It was kind of dark, lack of street lights, and he lost his life supporting, obviously, his fellow brothers and sisters at John Deere. Now, let's talk about the support. I read in your article that a lot of unions, I see the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union donated a bunch of food. The Teamsters were involved. So it seems like the community, they may, I mean, there's a lot of people that may not like unions, but they came forward. And could you speak to that?
Well, yeah, I'm happy to. The community support has been, in my opinion, surprisingly great. Unions don't always poll well, although that's improved recently. There's a picture in the paper today, in one of the papers today, of tables full of food that have been brought in to the Ankeny, that's near Des Moines, Iowa, to the Ankeny headquarters. So people are bringing in food every single day, and all these stores are offering discounts, including an axe throwing place. So I think the support's overwhelming, and the Des Moines Register poll, which many poll watchers consider the gold standard of polls, just has a new one out. 58% of Iowans support the unions and the workers. So that was a beautiful headline to see. Even a slight majority of Republicans allegedly support the workers. The only weak areas of support are wealthier Iowans and some rural Iowans.
What about the political nature here? Are we getting some support? You know, obviously next year is going to be the midterms. Are we seeing any of that? And on both sides, Democrats, Republicans, you mentioned some of the Republicans talking out about this. And I know that's a very, very red state. But what's going on so far?
Actually, no Republicans that I know of have been in support. Senator Grassley was the closest. He said he had worked at John Deere when he was young, and he hoped that the company could work something out. The governor also gave a very neutral statement. She's a Republican as well.
Yeah.
So and the Democrats have been vocal. The House Minority Leader, Senate Minority Leader, others have all spoken out. An interesting wrinkle, Ed, is that the Republican National Central Committee ran an ad attacking the workers, saying that farmers would be up in arms because they love John Deere. And so this is actually in opposition to what public opinion is showing in the state of Iowa right now.
Well, you know, that doesn't mean anything. They just want to drive a wedge between
right.
people. So
that's
unfortunate. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the very fact that there's so many strikes going on in America and so many workers just picking up and saying, you know what, I'm not working here anymore. I mean, it's so profound. I'm sure you followed the numbers. I think it was 4.3 million people quit their jobs in August. It was higher in the month of September. And Dave, I mean, you're no stranger to this. I mean, you've been organizing. You've been around since the 70s. You've been with the teachers union a long time. Teachers have become more vocal. We saw the Going Red. Remember that movement that started in what was it, West Virginia, a right to work state? Huh? Well, you're a right to work state, too. But what's your gauge on what's happening in America right now?
Well, I do want to add that the Cargill workers in Alberta, Canada, are about to go on strike.
Yeah, that's right.
That's going to be huge, too. So, well, as we said, you know, it's obvious what teachers are undergoing. We've even had highly politicized school board races here in Iowa, and I see that's going on nationally. Our Republican governor actually endorsed some anti-masks in schools candidates for a school board race in a suburb of Des Moines. So that's unprecedented that the Republicans are trying to make school board elections partisan. So as you just said, they're finding more ways to to drive wedges. And I think the overall goal for many of them is to do away with public education.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and do away with unions altogether.
Right.
All right. It's a crazy time in America. Just keep your head on straight. Stay safe, my brother.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, yeah. Dave Lesh is the editor of the Prairie Progressive, member of the American Federation of Teachers, Local 716. And that's Iowa City. Did I get that right?
You've got it.
Okay. And the Prairie Progressive. Got to check that out. I'll do that after the show. Okay, brother?
Thank you very much, Ed.
You got it. Quick break. When we come back, the North Coast Labor Federation.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Check them out online at oft-aft.org.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Before we get to Pat Gallagher, just want to mention, we're still in National Apprenticeship Week that started on Monday, and this is by presidential proclamation. This is the 7th annual National Apprenticeship Week. If you want to go to the Labor Department website, just Google Department of Labor, and you'll see all kind of events. They've got well over 800 events going on. We've been featuring many of the trades on the show this week. All our shows are archived, and today they're focusing on women in apprenticeship. And yesterday we had Doreen Cannon on behalf of Plumbers Local 5. And that was a perfect example of someone who rose above it all and became president of Local 55. And she started in an industry where not too many women were involved in the trade. So definitely check that show out. And you can go to awfradio.com. Right now, though, let's go to line number two. Welcome a dear friend, a sponsor, Pat Gallagher, on behalf of the North Coast Labor Federation and the United Steelworkers, and we're heavy on steelworkers news today. Hey, Pat, how are we doing today, brother?
Okay, doing okay, Flash. How are you?
So good. Let's get into it. Got some news here. Newport news, in fact. And I recall Fred Redmond, who is actually wearing two hats right now, still with the steelworkers, now Secretary Treasurer of the Labor Federation. He was working on this along with other steelworker members, and apparently no deal at Newport News. Talk to me about this, Pat. Go ahead.
That's right, Flash. Newport News, which is Steelworkers Local 8888, represents probably around 10,000 members. It's in Virginia, Newport News, Virginia. It's a right-to-work state, so members come in and out there. But they had a five-year contract, which with enhanced wages and pensions, reduced the members' employee healthcare contributions. It enhanced promotional opportunities for people in lower classes so they could move up on a job chain and make more money. And we thought it was a pretty fair deal, but the membership rejected the deal yesterday. So right now we're looking at our next steps, going back to the bargaining table and see what we can do. We're in a process now of surveying the members why they rejected the contract, and see if we can put some more proposals together and make sure we get a contract that they can agree with and prosper with in the future. So
different kind of climate out there with workers today. Little bit of militancy, won't you say?
Yeah, yes it is. I mean, a lot of the issues are like respect and dignity. I think workers actually have a little bit of animosity and towards their employers now. A lot of it's due to the COVID issues, and a lot of times we were being forced to go to work and do things, and when a lot of the bosses and everything were home working from home, and I think there's some resentment to that and animosity, and I think that's put a new attitude up in the labor movement that, we want our respect, we want our dignity, we want to know we are essential. I mean, look how important we found out, grocery store workers were and truck drivers were working during the pandemic. So I think it's an overall attitude that the labor movement now wants its respect and wants its dignity.
Yeah, first they were heroes and now they're zeros. So we're saying, hey, right, come on, let's get this done right. And we were talking earlier about the John Deere situation, and it took three times and they finally agreed to a contract. The first one rejected by 90% of the members, 90%. And they finally came through and they're back at work. They reported last night at various facilities, and they had a 61% margin of approval there. Let's move on to these tariffs. I was talking about this earlier in the show, and this goes back when Trump was in office, and there was a lot of support for the tariffs because we were getting clobbered by Chinese steel, but apparently it went too far, went over to Europe. And apparently Biden changed things a little bit. Can we talk about this?
Yeah, according to our trade law, Section 232 is a measure that can put tariffs and duties on imported steel and aluminum and other products. And what had happened is that, the Trump administration, to their credit, had initiated some 232 actions, but they also put a lot of exemptions and exclusions in these actions. So there was a amount of steel coming in that shouldn't have been coming in still, even though we had the 232 and the tariffs in there. They were exempt from the tariffs. A lot of it was coming from the European Union. They were, they had increased demand there, so they were, actually subsidizing their market by shipping and exporting their steel and aluminum over here. So the Biden administration has reached an interim agreement with the European Union that with a certain level of imports will be in there, and anything above this level will be a 25% tariff. So it'll be able for us to maintain their domestic supply and also keep out the European Union from flooding the market here too. But the big problem still is China. China has too much overcapacity. The global overcapacity in steel is a major issue, and we still got to deal with that.
Yeah, I was reading earlier, more than half of the world's steel comes from China, and primarily because they subsidize it. Is that pretty accurate then, right?
Oh, that's correct. Yeah, they have the capacity to make half of the steel. They own half of the steel capacity in the world, and almost all of it is all subsidized by the Chinese government.
Unbelievable. And we created all that. All right, let's talk about infrastructure. And as you know, we have a piece of legislation. I know the Biden administration wants to take it even further with the Build Back Better bill. I don't want to get into that. I want to talk about what we have that's now law, thanks to Biden's signature. And I know the steelworkers were very, very vigilant on this issue. The campaign, We Supply America, we had your president, Tom Conway, talking about that. Because when you talk about infrastructure, hey, steel is a big component of that. So the mood at the steelworkers union has got to be pretty good right now. What do you think, Pat?
We're very happy, and we applauded Congress and President and the Biden administration for passing the bill and signing the bill and paving it. This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity for us to rebuild our infrastructure. I mean, we need all these. We need improvements in our roads, improvements in our bridges, our electrical grids, our water systems, and internet systems. All those things need to be done in airports, ports, railroad, rail cars. We need all that stuff be done, and this bill will provide opportunity for all that to get done. And we're very pleased with it, and we want to be part of it and make sure that our members and our members' employers get the benefits of this bill, not foreign employers and foreign manufacturers.
And I believe that Sherrod Brown wrote that in. Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio made sure that when we rebuild our infrastructure, that steel is going to come from the United States of America. Correct? Am I hearing that right?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And Senator Brown's been a champion for the steel workers and the steel industry ever since he's come into office. And he's done a wonderful job lobbying for this, and he did tours and he did visits to promote this. Actually, I was with him in the Cleveland Cliffs plant in Toledo, Ohio, promoting this before it got passed. And he's done a great job to try to get this done. And this is going to have such an impact on the American people. It's going to make everybody's life better, increase everybody's standard of living. It's going to take a while before the impact comes down, before we can get these jobs going, before we can get these improvements built. But this is a long-term investment in our future and in the future of our country.
I think it's kind of funny, too, because there were a number of people that did not vote for that infrastructure bill. However, they are taking credit for it in their respective communities. That's how the politics in America is today. It's
I'm very disappointed, too, that it got to be such a, such a partisan issue and such an issue of debate and holding the Build Back Better, the larger bill, holding the infrastructure bill hostage for the bigger bill. I think the infrastructure bill was important, that we have to get that going, get that moving. And I think, I was really surprised that some of the Congress people have voted against it. And also I was pleasantly surprised Anthony Gonzalez voted for it, Republican and Republican congressman in Ohio here. But David Joyce voted against it, which are very disappointed with him too. So I don't understand anybody could vote against the infrastructure bill that's going to help all the citizens of our country.
Yeah, and he's got a lot of labor support too. That's a puzzling one, no doubt. All right, a little bit of time left here. You wanted to say something about Roxanne Brown. Now, Roxanne Brown, longtime member of the Steelworkers Union, replacing, Fred Redmond on the executive council. Is that right?
Right, yeah. Roxanne Brown, she's a vice president of the Steelworkers. She was elected to move into Fred Redmond's place on the National AFL-CIO Executive Council. And Roxanne's been working in Washington for us for years, and she does a great job, and she's very knowledgeable about the issues, and she'll be a great addition to the Executive Council of the AFL-CIO.
All right, Pat, I'm going to wrap it up on that note. Good news there for Roxanne Brown. You take care, stay safe, and the best of the Thanksgiving holidays. We'll talk to you next month, okay, brother?
Okay, happy Thanksgiving to you, Flash, and all the listeners.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the latest from the American Legion and the Alliance for Retired Americans. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.